Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it's about a year till Election Day, a little less than that, actually. It's Election Day 2011 today, so if you haven't already gone out and voted, folks, please do that. There are still some very important races around the country, and Jim has outlined those very helpfully in today's Morning Jolt if you're in some of those key states. One of the issues that, of course, we're going to be seeing as the presidential election ramps up is, what's it going to look like for the next 4 years? We've talked a lot about how most Americans are worse off than they were 4 years ago, but what are things going to look like 4 years from now, depending on who wins this election? And that's kind of the tone that Mitt Romney is taking out there. In fact, just yesterday, he was saying that when he was a kid, people used to ask their parents, what was it like to live through the Great Depression? And now he says, 20 years from now, you young people, your kids are going to ask you, what was it like to live through the Obama Great Recession? And he says, well, that largely depends on who wins next year. And he offered this really encouraging prediction, but probably a pretty accurate one, if Obama is reelected.
And if President Obama is reelected, why, you can expect more trillion-dollar deficits and perhaps a very significant risk that America will face the kind of fiscal crisis and calamity that you're seeing in Europe, in Greece, in Italy, in Spain, and so forth. The difference, of course, would be that there's no one big enough to bail out the United States of America.
Mitt Romney has pointed out, and others have pointed out, not to the extent that I would like in some of these debates, that the president is basically following along the European socialist model on how to run the country, growing government bigger. And while we haven't gone as far down the road as they have, that's where we're headed, people. Congratulations. And good for Romney for getting out there. The economy is clearly an issue that he speaks very well and very confidently on. And if that's the contrast that he can make for next year, should he be the nominee, it's going to be a pretty successful one, I think.
You know, in defense of Obama, Greg, and you can sense the sarcasm in my voice, if America was really headed down the path of Greece and other deeply troubled European nations, you would see people so frustrated by year after year of limited economic opportunity that they were just lashing out. In the streets, even, you know, big organized protests and people refusing to leave protests, and then just kind of, you know, turning their fury at the very means of production to go all Marxist on it. You know, in a place like Oakland, say, or Washington, D.C., they would just see a bunch of people getting together for a Americans for Prosperity event at the convention center, and they just start attacking them. They would just start jumping in front of traffic and pushing down old ladies and using their kids as human shields. You know, stuff like that is what we would be seeing if Obama's reelected. Oh, wait a minute! No, we're seeing all this right now. Obviously, I think this is a good message for Romney. I think it's kind of intriguing. There's a, just this morning, American Crossroads is one of those outside organizations that's, you know, with unlimited fundraising and putting up ads, and they have a short web ad featuring Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi, who's heading out of office early next year. And he uses the phrase, a second Obama term means making this malaise permanent. And that's a term with great resonance for those who remember the Carter years. So I think that malaise is a pretty good description, although I think it doesn't quite capture the anger that's out there, the frustration. I think people are really tired of having to defer their dreams for so long. And sometimes you get a bunch of snot-nosed punks like at these Occupy Wall Street stuff. But I think there's a much broader sense of general economic frustration that there have not been people hiring. We have not seen significant job growth in this country for the better part of 3 years now. This is why depression comparisons are not so outlandish as they once were. So, this is the clearest, most obvious area of weakness of Obama. We saw his ad yesterday that basically didn't mention, you know, just kind of presumed without Obama, all of our progress would undone. I'm just going to presume that the viewer of that ad would believe that under Obama, America has made progress.
Right.
That's very debatable. In fact, pretty hard to prove is what I would argue at this point.
Yes, you pretty much just have to believe these random speculative predictions from Pelosi and Biden and all these other people about what would have been the case had the stimulus and other programs not gone through. But the huge government power grab, the massive mounting debts, the clear lack of any interest in actually addressing those debts despite what he says over the past 2 years, pretty much clear that Romney is not making this too extreme in how he's describing where we're headed. Whether it happens in the next 4 years, hopefully we won't see, but we'll find out if Obama gets reelected. Mitt Romney, as we just mentioned, good strong statement from him. The economy kind of his critical issue. One of his less than stellar moments in the recent weeks that we've commented on was when he was at a phone bank in Ohio, a phone bank pushing for the opposition of Proposition 2. Proposition 2 is trying to repeal these measures that Governor Kasich and the Republican legislature have pushed forward, basically echoing kind of what we saw in Wisconsin with state workers being asked to contribute a little bit more to their pensions, to their health care benefits and so forth. And of course, the unions are trying to repeal that. And Romney was very hesitant on that. And now we're probably finding out why. As Jim reported today in the Morning Jolt, recent polling shows that the good side here is expected to lose by 23 points. This repeal effort is likely to pass roughly 59 to 36. That's a Democratic poll. But even in a PPP poll, Jim, that's a pretty huge margin of error for that to go the good way tonight. And I guess it's clear from Romney's perspective, who clearly needs to win Ohio next year, not to dig his heels in too closely on that issue.
Of all the things that are going to happen today, this is probably the most disturbing one for conservatives. You can argue that John Kasich and other Ohio Republicans haven't done a good enough job explaining this. The little hairs in the back of my neck that occasionally, you know, stand up as I think about the 2012 election is, if the economic anxiety and frustration that we talked about in that last martini, if it makes people counterintuitively even more dependent upon government, even more frightened of change, even more frightened of free market reforms, and as a result, they just want government to do more for them. Now, on paper, not enough people in Ohio work for the state government to be all that upset by a law that's designed to limit the power of state public sector unions. But I just have this feeling that perhaps there's this sense of, if people feel like they are getting a raw deal from the job market, from their workplace, from the current state of the economy, if they just kind of instinctively sympathize with public sector workers. We can argue that they shouldn't. I think we can argue that one of the problems facing many states, including Ohio, is that the state is spending way too much money, and this, the cost of doing business in the state is way too high, and high personnel costs and unrealistic workplace rules and labor contracts are a big portion of that. One of the things that the Kasich reforms in here is that basically state public sector unions can no longer be allowed to go on strike. Federal workers don't have the right to go on strike, so I don't quite understand what's going on there. But for some reason, this is troubling independents and moderates in Ohio. And I think Republicans really got to look hard at, all right, what are we doing wrong here? What is not connecting with people? Why do people see this as something scary and draconian when it is, in fact, a very basic and necessary reform to the way government does business?
Disturbing, especially in a key state. We'll see, and we've mentioned this so many times, Jim. We mentioned it last year at the midterms. We're mentioning it today, and we'll certainly be mentioning it in the lead-up to next year's elections. It's go time. This is basically America's time to decide in several intervals here which way we're going to go. In 2006 and 2008, Americans chose a way that I don't think they were fully aware of when they were choosing it. 2010, we saw a lot of the blowback, even in 2009 to some extent. Next year, the rubber really hits the road, and America needs to decide whether we're going to be a nation dominated by government or a nation dominated by free markets and personal liberty. So we'll find out, and we only got a few months left to figure that out. So martini number three now, and Jim, this takes us to the G20 summit, and I quote now from YNetNews.com, and it's an Israeli journalistic outfit, and I'll read verbatim, in fact, from their story. This is a conversation that happened after a session with the mics still on as President Obama was speaking with French President Sarkozy. Here's what it says. The conversation apparently began with President Obama criticizing Sarkozy for not having warned him that France would be voting in favor of Palestinian membership bid in UNESCO, despite Washington's strong objection to the move. The conversation then drifted to Benjamin Netanyahu, at which time Sarkozy declared, "I cannot stand him. He is a liar." According to the report, Obama replied, "You're fed up with him, but I have to deal with him every day." Now, obviously, Jim, an open mic when two guys don't know that the mics are on, a whole lot of worse things could probably have been said that obviously weren't said. But still, this kind of shows the attitude that this president, this administration has towards Israel. And I don't think it's anything you would have heard from previous administrations.
I have a feeling we're going to see an Obama 2012 campaign aimed at Jewish Americans saying, "Obama, I deal with Netanyahu every day." Many people will hear that and respond with outrage. I'm going to hear that and just kind of respond with BS. I don't think Obama actually deals with Netanyahu every day. You're right, not the most embarrassing thing they could have said. Certainly not something that's, probably going to be all that helpful for U.S.-Israeli relations. But then again, it's not like anyone's terribly surprised that Obama doesn't like Netanyahu. Obama seemed to think that he could magically make Middle East appear by forcing the Israelis to make more concessions, and lo and behold, that has not occurred. All in all, not the worst thing that could have been said, probably a revealing moment. I guess perhaps the intriguing thing is how, like, Sarko is the guy taking the attack. You're like, ah, sacre bleu, le Netanyahu with the pain. And Obama's kind of, yeah, me too. You know, kind of a, yeah, yeah, you know, there's kind of a yippy dog mentality, you know, sense of Obama's agreeability to that. So probably doubling damage for the president. These sorts of things very rarely turn into a huge deal. I remember George W. Bush observing that a correspondent for the New York Times was a major league, you know what.
Yes.
And Dick Cheney concurring big time. And in the end, that was just kind of this, you know, fun historical footnote. So my guess is this is not that surprising. And this will probably just, you know, be, have some ruffled feathers. It just kind of illuminates the smart diplomacy this administration is oh so well known for.
Yeah, exactly. I remember George W. Bush being caught on mic one time with his mouth full of lunch food yelling out,
yes.
Yo, Blair. And Blair was
being
derided as the lapdog. And you mentioned this is kind of Obama more agreeing with Sarkozy, which is kind of reminiscent of the Libya policy. France taking the lead there.
Leading from behind.
Yes, exactly right.
You said it, Sarko.
And one more thing here that is kind of disturbing, to say the least. This is late in the story. Quote, the surprising lack of coverage of this open mic exchange may be explained by a report alleging that journalists present at the event were requested to sign an agreement to keep mum on the embarrassing comments. Why? Why in the world would you do that unless there was some sort of agenda there to protect the munificent sun god, as you call him?
The short answer is that my sense is that among European press, there's a very different, you know, when you talk about European press being in bed with politicians, it's France. Sometimes they're literally in bed with the politician. So, you know, frustratingly, that is the way things are over there. We have our, you know, rambunctious press traditions here in the United States, and I'm glad this got out there. Even though it's not the biggest story in the world, it's useful to, useful to indicate that Obama has his low opinion of Netanyahu isn't just a matter of body language at summits. He really does disdain the guy.
Yeah. As you said, no big surprise, but it does confirm it. Jim, have a great vacation and a great cruise. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
The full report coming in a couple of weeks, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.